In his new book, The Age of Radiance, author Craig Nelson reveals how atomic power and radiation are indivisible from our everyday lives, tracing mankind's complicated relationship to nuclear energy. When Marie Curie and Edward Teller, Enrico Fermi, forged the science of radioactivity, they created a revolution that arced from the end of the 19th century through the course of World War II and the Cold War of superpower brinksmanship to our own 21st century confrontation with the dangers of nuclear power and proliferation, a history of paradox, miracle, and, yes, nightmare. Craig Nelson is the author of Rocket Men, The First Heroes, Thomas Paine, and Let's Get Lost. He was a vice president and executive editor of Harper & Row, Hyperion, and Random House. It is a great pleasure to welcome Craig Nelson to the program. Thank you very much for being back with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the new book is The Age of Radiance, The Epic Rise and Dramatic Fall of the Atomic Era. What brought you to this subject?
Well, my last book was about the story that started with Sputnik and ended with Americans landing on the moon. And it was an incredible achievement mixed with some terrible disappointment, mixed with a great human drama, mixed with a big juicy story about the government, industry, the military, the science, all interacting together, a big turning point in American history, and I wanted to do something at least that good again, so I decided to tell this incredible story, which has all those elements.
What do you think there is about this story that is so essential to us and is such a part of who we are as a nation, and yet it sort of happened and it really isn't a major part of our told history?
Exactly. In literally 30 years, we've gone from a place where everyone assumed that what the end of the world was going to be like to a place where all of that talk is comical. So it's just an amazing issue about how myths are created among human beings, how they rise and fall, how they vanish, and which myths stick around. And that's the one part of the story that I really love.
Where did you want to begin?
Well, I guess my favorite start of all this is how all of these people believe that when they first started finding out about this stuff, they were just flabbergasted by the magical qualities they were uncovering. I mean, we're talking about rocks and metals that they may not have a heart, but they do have a pulse. And they send out this remarkable energy that is so vivid that people say, you know, the degradation of radiation over time that transforms things into different elements is not a life but a half-life. So Marie Curie, for example, would walk into her lab first thing in the morning before the sun came up, and she would leave all of her radium samples out on the walls so they'd be glowing like aquatic fireflies. But some people noticed that when she put the samples away, the walls were still glowing. And Enrico Fermi's plutonium, here is this silvery metal you could hold, and it was warm as a puppy. But the medical solution at Los Alamos, where if you hold it too long, was high amputation. So you have this constant conflict going on between what seems almost like a warm, living thing that's dangerous. And so, and part of the reason that I think the book is exciting to read is because we're hearing all these fantastic people and their incredible discoveries, but we know what's going to happen.
Right. You use the word dangerous, and I find that interesting because in the book, I mean, you really put this into an incredible context of the power of radioactivity, of the power of this. Yes, there's magic. Yes, there is science, but there is incredible danger, and there is even just mind-numbing amounts of power.
Just incredible that there's a in Hamburg they have a monument to the martyrs of nuclear science, and there's over 400 names on that monument, including almost everyone you've ever heard of who's worked in nuclear science. Marie Curie is on it, her daughter Irene Curie is on it, her husband Pierre Curie is on it, because they didn't know what they were doing, and it took a long time to figure out the mistakes that were going on that were causing people to become deathly ill from working with this material. But the one fascinating couple was a chemist and a physicist in Berlin, Meitner and Hahn, who were having trouble with so much radioactive material all over their lab that they couldn't get accurate readings. So they came up with this procedure of tremendous cleanliness that everyone had to follow to keep the experiments pure, and that led to both of them living to be 84 years old, you know.
In the, again, when I talk about context, of putting this all into context, it comes out of a need, right? It came out of what we perceived as a need for this.
Well, the magic immediately led to people trying to see what this would do. And one of the things that it would do was that if you had a tumor, those cells are very fast-growing, and radioactive materials especially kill fast-growing cells. So if you could figure out how to apply this radioactive material, you could kill the tumor without affecting the healthy cells around it. So first they did that, but then when Lisa Meitner, a woman who was written out of history twice, first by the Nazis for being a Jew and then by the post-war Germans for being a woman, after she discovered vision, pretty much the entire rest of this story has to do with one question: what if Adolf Hitler had an atomic bomb? And almost the entire Manhattan Project, the development of nuclear power, almost all of it jumped from that one spot.
When you think of that, of power and atomic power and nuclear energy and the ways we use it, I mean, you make the point in the book that in some ways all of us are radioactive. It has become, again, back to what I said a moment ago, it shows the power that we are all connected to it in some way.
Yes, I think it's fantastic because, before I started this book 5 years ago, my idea of radioactivity was that it was very rare and very dangerous. You know, if you had any contact with radioactivity, it could immediately give you cancer, and, you could only find it in, like, bomb arsenals and power plants. And instead, it turns out, it's falling down on us from the skies at cosmic rays. It's rising at us from the ground, from uranium decaying in the bedrock. It's in granite and kitty litter and Brazil nuts and bananas. It's in your smoke detector and your microwave oven. And in fact, all human beings, your cats and your dogs, your neighbors and your family are all radioactive, and all human beings are radioactive. So when we all get together, we are all irradiating each other.
You were talking about the cast of characters in this book a moment ago, Marie Curie, Enrico Fermi, and Edward Teller, to name a few. Talk a little bit about how they were working alone and separately, and then ultimately how their work started to overlap.
Well, every story you hear about these giants of science who we all know today, they all started off as nobodies working in the middle of nowhere. All of the great discoveries that Marie and Pierre Curie made were done in a shed that had been used to dissect cadavers by the community college medical school. The discovery of X-rays was done by a washed-up 50-year-old man in that hotbed of scientific research, the University of Würzburg. In a lab that looks sort of like something, you know, a teenager might put together in his basement today. So it's just amazing how all of these stories come from these different people all working in the middle of nowhere. But they had were all publishing in scientific journals, and they all knew what each other was doing. And in fact, frequently they would send preprints of these scientific journals to each other. And so all of the major names in this story are in constant contact with each other, starting with the Curies, are in constant contact with each other. And the theory we've had of the internet, of the hive mind, well, I don't know if it works on the internet, but it certainly works in science, where every single advance is based on what someone was doing just before you.
When you look at it of this collaboration and ultimately trying to come up with the science that as we mentioned before, would have various applications, it's still, no matter when we were working on it, there was always that aspect of secrecy. It seems to run through the entire book of that just the need and necessity of secrecy.
Well, the beginnings, of course, were the fact that the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima was such a simple design that they burned the plans for it after Los Alamos dissolved, because it was just a shot of uranium thrown into a plug of uranium. It was basically a gun inside of a bomb, and anybody could build it, so they were very worried about that. But in fact, after the war, American talked about the reason we had an atomic monopoly was because we had atomic secrets. And everybody assumed that those secrets were inside the brains of the geniuses at Los Alamos. But that's not true. The secret to nuclear arms is the fissile fuel that goes inside it, the plutonium or the uranium isotope, because producing that is very difficult. In fact, a couple of years ago, there was news about a virus that the United States and Israel had sent after Iran's nuclear facility. And what that virus did was it made those centrifuges creating that fuel commit suicide. So the big research and the big control secrecy is about the way that you make the fuel and not necessarily the engineering of the bombs themselves. And where the saddest part about all this is that much of the research into the fusion bomb, the thermonuclear bomb that came after the fission bomb dropped over Japan, is still classified. So the people who are working on fusion energy as a future power source, which may be one of the technological breakthroughs that make nuclear power feasible in the future, do not know this vast library of knowledge that had been explored in those tests.
The name of the new book is The Age of Radiance, The Epic Rise and Dramatic Fall of the Atomic Era. It is published by Scribner. Craig Nelson, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Age of Radiance by Craig Nelson. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.